Hello there. Thanks for joining us today on this Monday, February 25th. This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, President Trump is optimistic about a summit with North Korea's Kim Jong-un. Trump postpones new trade tariffs on China. The U.S. now looking at new ways to get aid into Venezuela. And Hollywood's biggest night of the year, we will go live to the Oscars in Los Angeles. It's all on today's International Edition. Well, President Donald Trump said on Sunday that he will extend tariffs to de-escalate the tensions between the U.S. and China, citing substantial progress in weekend talks between the two countries. He tweeted that there have been productive talks on some of the most difficult issues dividing the U.S. and China. U.S. and Chinese negotiators met through the weekend as they seek to resolve a trade war that has rattled the financial markets. The world's two biggest economies have been locked in a conflict over U.S. allegations that China steals technology and forces foreign companies to hand over trade secrets in an aggressive push to challenge American technological dominance. Joining us now live from Hanoi, Vietnam, where the president is going to be meeting with North Korea's leader in a few days, VOA White House Bureau Chief Steve Herman. Steve, thank you for being with us. Do you have any idea about what specific difficult issues they seem to be having some success with?
Yes. First of all, Lori, I should correct. I'm still here in the United States. We're leaving on Air Force One tomorrow.
Okay.
Hanoi. And just a few hours ago at the White House, President Trump spoke about what's been going on in the negotiations with China. He said he was giving a little advanced information, teasing in a way he does sometimes to preview what he says is going to be something big. And what he essentially said is that they've been going back and forth, and it's been working out very well. And he expects some very big news over the next week or two. But this will be closed. The deal will be closed between him and President Xi Jinping personally. And it's expected that at the end of March, we'll see the Chinese president again at Mar-a-Lago in Florida to wrap this up. Now, one thing that was very interesting, he had praise for Robert Lighthizer, who is the U.S. trade representative. And there was a bit of an odd scene Friday in the Oval Office where the president said he was very dissatisfied with memorandums of understanding. And Mr. Lighthizer, Ambassador Lighthizer, was actually sort of trying to correct him on that, leading to a tense situation. And we've heard behind the scenes there's been quite a bit of friction between these two. But tonight, again, they seem to have sorted it out. And all indications are that a deal is going to be done. And as the president says, as he's billing it, it'll be the largest trade deal ever, although that remains to be seen.
Do you know what the ultimate goal here for the U.S. is in these negotiations?
Well, the ultimate goal in the eyes of this administration is to really crack through the big trade imbalance between the United States and China, and to have commitments from China that'll rectify that, along with something binding on protecting American intellectual property. And the president did say earlier today that there had been a particular progress in a number of these areas, and of course, the president's so pleased that he's not increasing tariffs on $200 billion in Chinese imports that were supposed to go into effect in about a week if they couldn't work things out.
Right, and the president also said that if negotiations progress well, he would meet with Chinese President Xi Jinping at his Florida resort to finalize the agreement. Would you say that it seems to be heading in that direction?
Yeah, absolutely. We had had indications for a number of weeks that this is how this thing was going to close out. There had been speculation for a while that President Trump would stop in China on his way to the summit in Vietnam with Kim Jong-un, or maybe stop there on the way back. But it looks like that what will probably happen is we'll see Xi Jinping again at Mar-a-Lago. And the last time they were there, as they were having dessert, essentially the president was firing remotely on Syria, much to the surprise of his Chinese guests.
Hmm. Well, I have heard, though, that critics are worried the president has given up leverage without taking advantage of the deadline. Both sides clearly want a deal, though. Do you think that this is coming sooner rather than later?
Well, they've been at it for a while because there was supposed to be something signed, sealed, and delivered by March 1st, and that's not going to happen. This is not going to be over in a week, but we do know that the president really was leaning very heavily on the U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer to get something done, although Lighthizer and others had expressed pessimism about the willingness and ability of the Chinese really to agree to something significant.
All right. Well, we will continue to watch it, and we appreciate your time. We know you got a long flight ahead. That is VOA White House Bureau Chief Steve Herman. Thanks for being with us.
My glory.
Well, North Korea, the official KCNA news agency on Sunday, is confirming that for the first time its leader, Kim Jong-un, will hold a second summit with President Trump. Apparently, it's usually very secretive. This is just days ahead of this high-stakes nuclear meeting in Vietnam's capital of Hanoi this week. Kim left Pyongyang by train Saturday afternoon for the summit, accompanied by senior North Korean officials as well as his influential sister. Trump and Kim will meet in Hanoi. This is now 8 months after their historic summit in Singapore, the first between a sitting U.S. president and a North Korean leader, where they both pledged to work toward the complete denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. Joining us now live, I believe, from Vietnam is VOA correspondent Bill Gallo. Bill?
Yeah, hey, how's it going? I am in Hanoi. Indeed.
Okay, I wanted to make sure because I got it wrong with Steve Herman. He's on his way there, but hasn't quite left yet. So before we get to the actual meeting, and you've probably been up all night traveling, are you getting a sense of how people there in Vietnam are reacting to hosting the meeting?
I think it's quite an exciting thing. I mean, not everyone follows international politics to the same degree, but obviously this is in East Asia, and North Korea is very relevant for people here. They're very proud to host the summit. Some bars actually in town are having like Kim Jong-un and Donald Trump-themed cocktails. In fact, there's one bar that's having a Kim Jong ale. It's hot and spicy with a fresh aftertaste, they say. So, you know, there's a fun kind of setting, kind of mood here in Hanoi right now. And it's pretty appropriate setting, I think, for a meeting between Donald Trump and Kim Jong-un. Singapore was very, very, very orderly, very clean, almost, you know, you could say sterile in some ways. Hanoi is more unpredictable, and I think somehow more fitting of a summit between these two leaders.
Well, with little progress since the two leaders met last time in Singapore, North Korea apparently wants an easing of punishing U.S.-led sanctions, security guarantees, and a formal end to the 1950 to 1953 Korean War, which ended in a truce but not a treaty. What are they expected to actually focus on, and what is North Korea actually expecting to give up, if anything, in exchange for U.S. concessions?
You know, that really is the question. And it's interesting because in the lead-up to this summit, senior White House official gave a background briefing, basically acknowledging that even though Donald Trump and Kim Jong-un agreed to, you know, work toward the denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula in Singapore last year, the two sides haven't even agreed on what denuclearization means. So that's a pretty big thing to admit 8 months later, after you've agreed to the idea of denuclearization, to finally admit that, well, we don't even agree on what that means. Of course, for North Korea, it means not only, you know, steps related to their own nuclear arsenal, but it also means reducing the U.S. Security commitment to its ally, South Korea. There is some thought, though, that the process will move forward. As you said, it might be some sort of minor step, whether that's dismantling a nuclear facility or an underground test site, or actually maybe giving up a small amount of either, you know, warheads or missiles, something like this, something that can actually move the process forward is what the U.S. is hoping to get here. In exchange, the U.S. may offer some sort of sanctions relief.
Well, months after President Trump declared that North Korea no longer poses a nuclear threat to the U.S., Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said that the country does remain a threat, just ahead of this meeting saying that. He was asked by Jake Tapper on CNN, do you think North Korea remains a nuclear threat? And he said yes. So what if any, guidance is there as to what Trump will be looking to achieve, given he has seems to disagree with that perspective that they're a nuclear threat?
Right. Well, as you recall, immediately after the Singapore meeting, Donald Trump tweeted that North Korea is no longer a nuclear threat. Not only Mike Pompeo, but his intelligence agencies, of course, disagree with the idea that North Korea is not a nuclear threat. They say there's no evidence that North Korea has made that decision. But it's important here to separate, I think, the rhetoric of Donald Trump that tends to be more domestic political focused. When he says he's taking care of the North Korea issue, I think he's mainly talking to his constituents, sort of trying to convince them, look, I've got this, I've got it taken care of. There was really no one who believed that the North Korea nuclear threat was addressed after just one summit. I don't think there's many people who believe this will be solved after this summit. This is a process that's going to take many, many months, almost certainly years, if in fact this process continues to move forward.
Can the president afford to come back without some sort of concrete agreement?
I don't think so. U.S. lawmakers, primarily on the Democratic side of the political spectrum, have been putting more and more pressure on Donald Trump to come up with results here, to show results. They see the inconsistent messaging on behalf of the Trump administration that you've sort of pointed out here. And they're really pressuring him to look, you have to now either show us results, and prove that this process is actually leading to something beyond just, what North Korea is said to have wanted, which is a delay in order to, continue developing their nuclear program, which, of course, they're continuing to do as these talks go forward. So, no, the answer is I do not think that Donald Trump will be able to afford politically coming home without some sort of agreement here.
Right. And lastly, some of the president's top advisors are said to be concerned that the president will be sort of outfoxed by Kim. They're worrying that the president, in his eagerness to declare victory on the world stage, could make bigger concessions in exchange for empty promises of denuclearization. Is that something you're hearing?
Yes, and I would say the main concern among analysts that study this issue is the private meeting between Kim Jong-un and Donald Trump. If you recall, in Singapore last year, in the private meeting between Donald Trump and Kim, the U.S. president actually agreed to suspend military exercises with South Korea. That was something that he really hadn't, consulted with his team of experts and negotiators on. And I think there is some concern that he will do something like that here. However, he does have the authority to do this. and he has gotten Kim Jong-un, obviously, to meet with him and make some concessions. So, let's see what happens in that private meeting. But I think that's sort of the meeting to watch.
All right. Well, we certainly do appreciate your perspective. And hopefully we'll talk to you again to get an update. That's VOA correspondent Bill Gallo. He is in Hanoi, Vietnam. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Well, in Venezuela, opposition leader Juan Guaido has called on the international community to consider all options to resolve Venezuela's crisis, a dramatic escalation in rhetoric that echoes comments from the Trump administration, hinting at potential U.S. military involvement. Guaido's comments over the weekend came after a tumultuous day that saw President Nicolas Maduro's forces fire tear gas and buckshot on activists trying to deliver humanitarian aid in violent clashes that left two people dead and some 300 injured. Now, for weeks, the U.S. and regional allies have been amassing emergency food and medical kits on Venezuela's borders in anticipation of carrying out a humanitarian avalanche by land and sea to undermine Maduro's rule. Vice President Mike Pence is heading to Venezuela in a few hours. Joining us now live, VOA White House correspondent Patsy Witakusuwara, who will be traveling with the press and the vice president to cover the trip. Patsy, thanks for joining us now.
My pleasure.
So I understand senior administration officials were briefed a bit, or briefed reporters a bit, I should say, earlier ahead of the trip. What did you learn about the trip and the goal of the vice president, and particularly in the aftermath of all this violence over the weekend?
So essentially what we were told by the senior Trump administration official is that the United States intends to bring the full measure of economic and diplomatic weight to bear on the Venezuela issue. And the speech by Vice President Pence tomorrow in front of the Lima Group will show what he calls concrete examples of what that means. So U.S. Vice President Mike Pence will leave. We will be departing. I mean, I'll be heading out to Joint Base Andrews in a couple of hours. We are scheduled to leave at around 3:30 in the morning and to arrive in Bogota at 9 a.m., where Vice President is expected to hold meetings with Colombian President Iván Duque and also Juan Guaidó before delivering remarks to the Lima Group. And then he will be meeting with Venezuelan exiles and their families before heading back to Washington. So it's just in and out. Essentially, this is a meeting between Pence and regional leaders to discuss strategy to hasten the departure of Nicolas Maduro and also to get humanitarian aid that's currently piling up on the border in Brazil and Colombia into Venezuela.
And will he be meeting with declared president, opposition leader Juan Guaidó?
Yes, that's the plan. So he will be meeting with Duque and then Guaidó before the speech. And we are hearing reports and also from my sources on the ground that Guaidó will be requesting at the meeting the use of force and also more forceful diplomatic action and the use of force against Nicolas Maduro for blocking the humanitarian aid. So there's clearly a certain ramping up of rhetoric on all sides from Guaido's side, while at the briefing today with the senior administration official, I asked, you know, what is the position of the U.S. on the use of force on this? And I was just basically reminded that President Trump has always said that all options are on the table, and Mike Pence will meet tomorrow with Guaido and regional leaders to see what the next steps that will be taken are.
And would the U.S. be willing to sit down with Maduro to reach any sort of solution to the crisis?
Yes, so I asked that question, and basically the answer that I was given was that the time for dialogue has passed, and the only discussion that the U.S. will have with Maduro will be to discuss the timing and the nature of his departure. And that's essentially what he said. So I don't really know if that means that there will be any kind of meetings discussed. But clearly, this is a situation that's getting more and more dire and getting more intense as the days go by.
And lastly, well, are there U.S. forces in neighboring countries there in case further violence or Maduro's forces were to actually really step up the attacks?
Well, there's also there's always SOUTHCOM forces in the area, and they have been very engaged, and they've been monitoring the activities. And, you know, as the briefing given by the senior administration official is that they've been in coordination with White House and also the State Department. So at this point, there's really a lot of unknown, and I don't really want to get ahead of myself before the speech being given both by Juan Guaidó and also Vice President Mike Pence. So we'll see in a couple of hours, actually in about 12 hours. We'll know more by that time. Hopefully the speeches will be done, and we'll see where everybody stands at that point.
All right. Well, we appreciate your perspective so close to getting on a very long flight. That's VOA White House correspondent Patsy Witakusuwara. Hopefully we'll talk to you again to get a further update later in the week. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
And you're listening to International Edition on VOA.
The 2019 VOA calendars are in. This year's calendar features a variety of scenic photos that capture U.S. byways, including beautiful photos of the Big Sur Coast Highway and even the historic Route 66. Tune in to Border Crossings at 1500 Universal to request a free calendar.
Voice of America's news, talk, and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA Newsfeed. VOAnews.com.
VOA's International Edition continues. The 91st Academy Awards is considered Hollywood's biggest night, and this year's Oscars are no different, but they are different in many ways. For one, there was no host. Also, so many great contenders that people were having a hard time guessing who would win all the biggest awards. Some of the biggest movies, A Star is Born, Black Panther, Bohemian Rhapsody, The Green Book, The Favorite, and more. And joining us live now from the Oscars at Dolby Theater in Los Angeles is VOA's Anna Cook. Anna, thanks for being with us.
Hi, Lori. Thank you for having me.
Well, what a great gig you got tonight to be at the Oscars. So, of course, it's morning to many of our listeners, but this thing is it still going on?
Yes, it very much is. It's been just about 2 hours into the ceremony, and it's actually about to end in about an hour. Originally, every year it runs around 4 hours long, but this year, as you mentioned, with no host, it's supposed to run around 3 hours long. But some of the biggest awards have been given. For example, Best Supporting Actress was given to Regina King, and Best Supporting Actor was given to Mahershala Ali, and then Best Documentary was given to Free Solo as well. And then, of course, Roma's been winning a lot of awards with Best Cinematography and Best Foreign Film as well.
What were some of the highlights so far? Obviously, there were some really spectacular performances.
Yeah, the Academy Awards began big with Queen performing with Adam Lambert. That was very emotional. People in the audience were thrilled. And then, of course, we had a series of other performances. But one performance that everybody is talking about right now in the audience and on social media is with Shallow from A Star is Born Again with, of course, Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper. There was just a lot of chemistry going on in that performance. And, of course, Lady Gaga just won the Best Original Song for that.
I did watch that, and certainly there sure seemed to be. Obviously, the movie sure showed a lot of chemistry between the two, but it almost looked like watching them sing that song together, like there could be something brewing there. Lots of chemistry, for
no,
sure.
Exactly. Yeah, a lot of people would agree with that.
And besides not having a host, was there anything different about this year's ceremony?
Yeah, so this is actually the second time in the ceremony's history that there is no host. And as I mentioned again, it runs 3 hours long compared to 4 hours long. But also the theme for this year seems to be crystal and roses. There are thousands of real roses and crystals installed onto the stage. Actually this year is a lot of firsts for a lot of movies. For example, Roma is the first Netflix film to win the Oscars, and Black Panther has been a really good film for African Americans. For example, the best costume design was won by Black Panther's Ruth Carter, and she's now the first African American to win that award. And then for Best Achievement in Production Design, that was also won by Black Panther, first African-American to win this award again.
And what was it like to be on the red carpet?
Very exciting. It's been very chaotic. It's my first time at the Oscars, but apparently there's less decorations on the red carpet compared to previous years. But, you know, it still seemed very exciting to me. A lot of reporters, hundreds from all over the world on the red carpet reporting on the sidelines. So that was really interesting. I wasn't able to see any celebrities because I'm in the interview room, but yeah, a lot of activity, and the red carpet runs 900 feet from Hollywood Boulevard all the way to Dolby Theater. So it's just been surreal.
Well, hopefully you'll get invited to some of those big after ceremony parties and meet some celebrities. Absolutely. We appreciate your being with us. That is VOA's Anna Cook live from the Oscars at the Dolby Theater in Los Angeles. Meanwhile, we have some other news in to discuss with you as far as the situation in Nigeria. Nigerian police say 128 people have been arrested for suspected election-related offenses, including ballot box snatching, vote trading, and impersonation, while a cache of explosives was also found. A police statement really didn't give much more detail about the explosives, but said 38 assorted weapons were also seized. The statement said that despite the few unfortunate incidents, Saturday's election was generally successful, though it expressed deep concern about hate speech by some politicians and supporters. One analysis unit recorded 39 deaths in election violence, including an extremist attack in the Northeast. Africa's most populous country has voted for president in more than 450 National Assembly seats. Official results are expected as early as later on Monday, though voting continued in scattered areas on Sunday because of various delays. A top House Democrat threatened on Sunday to call special counsel Robert Mueller to Capitol Hill and subpoena documents and sue the Trump administration if the full report on Mueller's Russia investigation is not made public. Well, you've been listening to International Edition. That does it for today, but you can find us anytime at voanews.com. We thank you for joining us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Jimmy Cook. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a great day.
This is VOA News.